B-Pod Studios.
This is the flagship station of the Boston Bruins.
Pasternak,
shoots,
he scores the hat trick.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Listening at home to Touch or Enrich is simple with your Amazon or Google smart speaker.
Oh, I need one of those.
Just say, play 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And I'm not talking about asses anymore. 617-779-0985. The free agency, the silly season, is underway. And by the way, the Jets got a huge, huge break when that jabroni took the deal from Minnesota instead of coming to them. They were going to invest like $5 million.
Anthony Barr,
like $500 million in linebackers.
Yeah, C.J. Mosley really ought to be enough. Correct?
No,
this guy is.
They can draft. I mean, they can. Yeah, there's 5,000 edge rushers in this draft.
They want him to play edge rusher, and they're literally in prime position to pick one up. So yes. Why would you do that?
I don't know. I mean, they got lucky. It seems like McCagnan needs to spend money, but they did get Le'Veon Bell for a 4-year deal, where he'll never win anything. And here is the Schefter man, Adam Schefter, talking about the Le'Veon Bell deal.
And everybody's waiting to see the terms of the deal.
Someone's calling.
Am I allowed to take it or not?
You do what you want to do.
Hold on a second. I got to take this.
Turn his mic off. Mic off.
Mic off.
Not a hot mic. Not a hot mic.
Okay.
Not a hot mic. Not a hot mic. You can call him back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. What are we doing?
Okay, so Le'Veon Bell, ready?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Right.
Hold on.
Right.
Vamp for a second.
I was a minute ago. Stanford Steve went 2-0. They got a gambling show.
Is he going to wear number 26?
I don't know. Is that taken? Any great Jets that wore that number?
All right. Can't think of any.
We're texting.
There's no great
compelling.
Jets.
Compelling.
Hold on.
All right. Tweeting, texting. What else do I have?
Okay, here we go.
All right, here we go.
Numbers.
Here we go.
Le'Veon Bell, 4 years, $52.5 million with the Jets.
Okay.
$30 million guaranteed.
Were we just talking about this, about people who just can't wait to do that?
Yeah, Schefter had to tweet that out. He had to tweet it out before he said it on the air. It's ridiculous. And
breaking news gets him off.
Yeah, that's right. He is very short, by the way. And we were told he makes $4 million a year.
I believe it.
Because they don't pay anybody anything. Like, they're the guys that do SportsCenter make no money. And so Schefter, because and apparently he's in the pocket of some teams, I've been told. And so
I think he's in the pocket of the NFL just in general, too.
Yeah, that's what I've been told. So, I mean, for what? So he can tweet something out 5 seconds before everyone else tweets it out? $4 million for Adam Schefter. And essentially just to sit by a phone and, like, get a phone call and act like a big shot. Like, who cared about, like, why did anyone need to know the parameters of that deal at that point? Like, what fan cares? Eventually you would like to hear it, but why does that need to be broken right at that point?
As long as you have the guy going to the team.
Yes.
It's interesting in that Pittsburgh offered him more and he turned it down. So I would think that would be the only reason why. I mean,
I understand why
people cared about the deal. As far as the immediacy is concerned, why couldn't he wait until a commercial break to do it? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's showboating. And it's showing off for others, his colleagues in the business, don't you think? That's what guys in that reporting world, that's what they live for.
But $4 million to tweet something 5 seconds before someone else tweets it is, I'm not going to begrudge anyone any money, but that seems like an interesting way to make $4 million a year.
Don't you think they're paying $4 million for his access to basically every front office in the NFL and a lot of players? Like, the fact that he can get information right away whenever he wants it, basically from every team in the NFL.
But from what I'm told, there's a cost to that. Like, there's
sell your soul a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, there's contingencies on that you have to, that in order to get that kind of access, you have to avoid some topics.
Oh, yeah. So he'll say to himself, for $4 million, I'm willing to sacrifice my ethics or my soul to some degree. So
someone told me that he literally on air has never said Spygate, like that he's just never said it. And so in the allegedly, this is to get access to the Patriots, that he's agreed to certain conditions not to get not to say things in order to get access to the Patriots.
I believe it. You're right. There is a price to pay for that access. Always is, man.
I don't understand why everyone needs to know right then. And then, you know what sucks is, and then you go to on the internet to look at things, and the article's like two sentences long because they figure you just saw it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So the Jets got Le'Veon Bell, which means that he'll sit there for 4 years and complain.
You do or do not like this signing? You do not like this signing?
This one, I don't care.
That, like, it's a little surprising. Run offense has been.
I think that this was their intention all along. Is where they wanted to spend their money. Okay, so here's why I don't dislike it: is that it gives Darnold a break. And
does he have anyone to throw the ball to?
He's got Anderson. He's got that slot receiver they picked up, and he has
Crowder.
He's got Anunua.
Who is your best receiver?
Anunua is, if he's healthy, is a very good receiver.
So this is not a bad thing. I mean, you don't want to get him killed back there.
He averages 129 yards from scrimmage every week he rolls out there. That's 129 yards of offense. Boom, right there. You got every single week by signing Le'Veon.
Good receiver out of the backfield.
But the thing is that now I think that all you do is you draft offensive and defensive line, and then you just let the chips fall where they may if you have a quarterback.
Makes sense.
And you know Sammy D is going to be there for the long haul. Hall of Fame, they already got a plaque waiting for him.
Did you look at your helmet, signed helmet today, this morning before you came to work?
It's up on the third floor. It's under it's under protection. It's right by my AK-47. I have it up there. No one touches that.
Okay.
I have an Ozzie Smith rookie card, an Al Toon card, and then I have
Sammy D signed helmet.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Since the Le'Veon Bell trade, it's gone up to $15,000.
$5,000 overnight, because yesterday it was $10,000.
Yeah, yesterday it was $10,000, now $15,000. I've made already $14,900 on that
helmet. It's a good day for you. You should be excited, Fred.
Oh, yeah. Now, look out, championship. So they have C.J. Mosley, Jamal Adams, May, and Le'Veon Bell. And Robbie Anderson's okay. And Anunua, if he's healthy, is okay.
Out of all of those, Mosley's the best pickup. I mean, really.
Well, they certainly paid him.
They did, but Mosley is a really good player.
All right. Ted Johnson has got something going on today.
Going to the State House later on today after the show, boys.
He is going to the State House.
It's my first time lobbying. I'm not sure how to do it, but my friend Chris Nowinski from Concussion Legacy Foundation is here.
You know you're going to piss people off with this.
I'm curious what the response will be. Yeah. So I've done kind of like my own little survey at the gym yesterday, throwing this out to people. What do you think about this that I'm going to go lobby for tomorrow at the State House?
I agree with you.
I would
even go higher, but I mean, you can't tell people, I guess, what to do at that point, but I would even go higher in age, but we'll talk
about
that.
Let people know what it is, yeah.
Is your guy here?
He's here. He's ready to go.
All right, so Ted Johnson is going to talk about what he's lobbying at the State House for today. We'll have that in just a moment.
Hi, how are you, honey? Hello!
This is where Boston talks sports.
I'm overwhelmed.
Toucher and Rich.
You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Ted Johnson, obviously, many, many years with the Patriots. When I haven't been here, I understand that he's talked about his own concussion issues. And he, along with Chris Nowinski, I am pronouncing that correctly, And if I'm not, then I don't want to be corrected.
That's correct. Okay.
Chris Nowinski, PhD. He's the co-founder and CEO of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to solving sports concussion crisis through education, policy, and research. Now, you two are going to the State House today. What is it that you're trying to accomplish there?
Right, Chris.
Well, there's a bill that's been filed that would no longer allow tackle football in the state of Massachusetts before eighth grade. And Ted and I are going to go meet with some legislators to talk about it and educate them on the science of why this, even though it seems a little radical, why it makes sense.
Okay, so to my understanding is that you want to wait until puberty for and correct me at any point. This is just my limited reading sure. about the subject. Is that you want to wait till puberty because the fluid in the brain surrounding the brain is not fully developed before then?
Not quite.
Okay.
One of the many reasons why this makes sense is that your brain is actually developing as a child. We all know that. We see children be able to learn new things, become sort of different people between children and adolescents. And that's because their brain is changing every day. You have 86 billion neurons in your brain. You have enough your axons are so thin that in your own head, it's over 500,000 miles of axons. They go to the moon and back. It's a very fragile system. And so it's a bad time to hit kids in the head before high school. Between 8 and 13 is a magical development time. And so football, unfortunately, is a problem in that if you play a full season, virtually every kid playing tackle football is hit in the head more than 100 times. And we know this by putting sensors in a helmet. Some of them get hit in the head 500 times. And so it's the only sport left where we have a lot of kids getting hit in the head over and over and over again at a very young age. And so as a former football guy myself, I played at Harvard, if you want to have a long, healthy career in football, it's better off to wait until your brain's a little more developed before you get exposed to the contact.
Okay, when people, so this obviously is pissing some people off.
Yeah.
Now, when it pisses people off, what are their complaints?
Well, the primary complaint is don't tell me what to do as a parent.
Sure.
And I can understand that, right? We all believe that. And the reason why this might make sense for the government to intervene is because this is a safety issue. What we're trying to prevent primarily is this disease, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, what we've been studying at Boston University now for over a decade. The problem has been we've looked at almost 400 brains of football players by this point who've passed away, and more than 85% of them have had this disease. Nearly every NFL player, over 90% of college players, and we've even seen it in teenagers who've passed away who played just high school football. It appears that the longer you play tackle football, the greater your risk. It's called a dose-response relationship. It's not unlike smoking and lung cancer. The longer you smoke, the greater your risk. 1 year of smoking isn't a huge risk. 40 years of smoking is a massive risk, even though it still doesn't cause lung cancer in everybody. So in this situation, we're trying to say 20 years of football is very risky. And so the only way to if you enroll your child in the game young, the risk is they become good and they love it. If they start at 5 and they're good enough to play through college, that's a 17, 18-year career. And right now we're finding that almost everyone we've looked at who played that long has developed CTE. And so we're trying to prevent that by saying those first 8 or 9 years of tackle don't need to be there. It's not unlike, and then with the parent choice issue, it's sort of like, parents don't have every choice in the world around their kids' safety, right?
Right.
You can't ask, you don't say, my 10-year-old is more advanced and developed. I'm going to let them drive to school. You could probably teach them to drive to school safely most of the time, but it's still not, it's illegal. Parents don't get to choose that they want to put lead paint in their house anymore because we know that lead exposure causes neurological impairment, especially in children. And so it's the same idea that, you know what, it's a risk-benefit issue. The risk is your kid gets hit in the head over 100 times every fall for many, many years, and that could cause problems. And the question is the benefit of tackle football at 6 years old or 7 years old worth that risk, especially when flag football is such a great option?
And by the way, you need to be vaccinated to get into a lot of these overnight camps. They demand that your kids are vaccinated.
Good to know.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. Listen to someone be an anti-vaxxer talk, and your head will explode. All right, so you're pushing up against this, and they're saying you shouldn't do this, that you can't tell me how to parent. And you say, all right, ideally, I know you're aiming for this age, but ideally, if you had your druthers and you could tell parents exactly when it would be proper, if it would be proper to play tackle football, if you, in a perfect world, or what would you tell your kids?
So our education program with the Concussion Legacy Foundation is on my hat. Our flag football until 14. We strongly urge parents to if you love football, wait until high school. Your child is more developed. There's a whole host of reasons why it makes sense. You've got oversight from Mass Interscholastic Athletic Association. You're much more likely to have athletic trainers on the sideline. It's just a safer proposition. The question is, looking back in 20 years, is making it, disallowing it in the state the right move? And I think the question is, we have imperfect science, right? That in every situation, we have imperfect science. We're not completely sure exactly what the risk is to these children today. But right now, based on what we've seen over the last decade, it just seems too high that these kids will look back and go, why were you still letting me play football at 5 years old when 110 of the first 111 NFL players you looked at had this disease, when you found it in a 17-year-old named Nathan Stiles who died on a football field from a head injury who already had this disease in his brain? Why was I still playing at 5 years old when I could have just waited till high school and gained all the benefits and really minimized my risks?
Now, do you have children?
I have a daughter.
Okay. If you had, and your daughter could obviously play football as well, mm-hmm. but say your daughter wanted to play football, would you allow that?
I would. I'm under no circumstances would I allow her to play before high school.
Right.
And then afterwards, the beauty of it is the game is rapidly reforming. And so, she's 7 months old. So I have time to even make high school football safer.
Well, she should probably start playing soon. 7 months old. I mean, you got to get her out there. So you would not let her play until high school.
That yes, would be absolutely. Your... Firm line.
Okay. And is that even safe? Starting at that point?
It has risks, because tackling and blocking will cause your head to be impacted, many times. The question is tackle football at high school dramatically more risky than soccer at that age or ice hockey with checking? And I would say that it might be a little riskier, but it's a conversation you can have. You can make that decision. You can make that decision with your child. They may actually be old enough at 14 or 15 to somewhat understand the right risks they might be getting themselves into. But also, when I played high school football, we would hit 3-4 days a week. Mm. People are paying attention to this issue. The state of New Jersey just made a rule that you can only hit 15 minutes a week during the season. That cuts out like half the hits to your head.
Because practice is as much of an issue, if not more, than the games.
Well, the practice is the coach completely chooses whether it's a bigger issue, right? If you want to go live 4 days a week, you're going to get hit in the head three times or four times as many times as you would in games. If your coach says we're never hitting in practice, which many coaches are, the Ivy League has no tackling in practice anymore, then only games are your real risk.
And so in that. Because if you play like 12 games a year, 11 games a year, then you're severely limiting the amount of contact that you're going to have and therefore limiting the risk.
That, as far as we understand what the risk of CT is, it comes down to years of play, number of hits to the head.
All right. We will, Ted Johnson and Chris Nowinski, the PhD, he played at Harvard, big shot. And
in the WWE as well, Fred.
Wait, WWE?
Yes. He was John remembered this. Yeah, Chris was a lot of his problems with concussion started in the WWE, where it really started to affect his life. Chris Harvard was his name. He wrestled for 3 years.
Yeah, if you blinked, you might have missed me. But I was on Raw in 2002, 2003.
All right, get Jimmy Stewart on the phone because he's going to be very excited. 617-779-0985. Ted, I know that you've been through this, you've talked about this on the air when I wasn't here, but I'd like to get some of your opinions and why you're going to the State House. We'll be right back. Here are the headlines. There's a lot more to worry about than
Toucher and Rich. Real nightmare. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
985, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Real quick, Ted Johnson, how many gym tips were you asked for yesterday on Twitter?
Fred, it was funny because after I said, hey, if you have any questions about working out, tweet at me at Teddy J Radio, and I'll try and answer all your questions. I got a dozen, probably. Yeah,
you don't want to do that.
Yeah,
that's not something you're
involved with. Lesson learned on that one.
All right. Ted Johnson, along with Chris Nowinski, who's a doctor and co-founder, the CEO of Concussion Legacy Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to solving the sports concussion crisis through education, policy, and research. They're going to the State House with the ultimate goal of what?
Supporting House Bill 2007, which will no longer allow tackle football in the state of Massachusetts before 8th grade.
All right, so Ted Johnson, I know you've been on this show when I wasn't here, and you've gone into great detail about your issues. But people will probably find it a little controversial that here you are and you played football for this long time and you're supporting a bill to limit it. By the way, I would not. I told Chris I'd say this. I wouldn't allow my son or daughter to play football until high school, and then I'd be like, all right, here's what you're dealing with, and if you want to do it, I mean, because I can't really, I guess, tell them what to do at that point in terms of the athletics. I guess I could, but I would prefer that they didn't play at all. And for numerous reasons, not only for concussions, but if you play other sports, I don't need him blowing out his knee and then being out of sports for a year. But Ted, when did you get involved in this, and and I apologize again. I know you've talked about this a lot on the air, but what got you involved in this, and do you look back and regret some of the decisions you made as you were younger?
Yeah. Well, there's when I was younger, I wasn't allowed to play football until I was in eighth grade, and so my first year, I didn't play football until I was in a freshman in high school, and so football is a game unlike maybe basketball, hockey, lacrosse, baseball, that you can pick up later in life, and you don't need to be playing the game at the younger levels to be excel at it as you're older in high school.
Chris and I were talking about this, and you can get guys like Antonio Gates. If you're an athlete and you're a great athlete, you can walk onto a football field.
It's basically, So this all started. I met Chris, a friend connected us. Chris was in the works of writing a book called Head Games. And he came to interview me for his book in 2005. In the fall of 2005, I retired the summer of 2005 because I just knew at the time, Fred, that my head hurt. My personality had changed. I retired from the game, not knowing what CTE was, not knowing what post-concussion syndrome was, traumatic brain injury, all that kind of stuff. I just knew my head hurt. I knew my personality was changed. I knew something wasn't right, and so I retired. And so I met Chris. Chris came to my house in Weston in 2005. And it was like, it was an amazing meeting for me because there was not a name for what I was dealing with. I thought, you're going crazy. If you don't have a name to identify what it is you're suffering from, you can lose your mind a little bit. It plays tricks on you.
Now, did you equate it at that point to playing football, or did you just think you were going through something?
No. I knew it was because of the playing football. Because I knew all these subconcussive hits, if you want to call it, getting your bell rung. I knew they were happening so much to me over the last 2.5 years of playing football that something, it was affecting my personality. It was affecting my judgment. And so I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what the name was. Chris comes to my house and he says to me, do you have this, and this symptom? And I said, yeah. He goes, that's the same thing I have. Have you ever heard of post-concussion syndrome? I was like, no. So I retired from the game not knowing that there was a name for it. And so then I started. So he identified what it was I was dealing with. And then once he did that, it was like I was thirsting for research. I went and studied it. I went and I was amazed at what I found. The athletes, a lot of hockey, Pat LaFontaine was one of the first guys I read about who was really dealing with this. And so it opened my world up to this world. But little did we know, I mean, that was the tip of the iceberg. 2005, we were at the very beginning of what is now exploded into this, all this knowledge and understanding about something that I think people knew, but nobody's really talking about.
Right. You know? And so how long, and I know you're still dealing with stuff, but it seems like you've gotten it kind of under control, but how long, and how long and how much did it affect you in terms of, like, you say your personality was changing?
There's an acute effect to the initially for all the hits. And it took a while for those to kind of subside a little bit. But there's side effects that come from it, right? I mean, a lot of times if you have a predisposition for anxiety or depression, or you have impulse issues, sleep issues, I will contend that the hits to the head will exacerbate those symptoms. And so I've had to find ways to treat those, you know, whether there was a pharmaceutical answer to it, whether it was a therapeutic answer to it, whether it was a diet answer, whether it was, working out. I mean, I had to find ways because there was no blueprint.
Right.
There wasn't like you go, okay, this is how you handle post-concussion syndrome. Go do these things. And so it was all trial and error. And it was just, I was at the very beginning. Chris and I were in our journey to understand it more. We know a lot more now than we ever have, but there's still so much more to learn. There really is. And I mean, I think the next big thing, and Chris, you correct me if I'm wrong, and I think the next thing that I think if this happens could be the most legit threat to the game. And when I say that, I want to be very clear. Chris and I love football. Right. We love football. So I think it's we have to say that whenever we're talking about this, I think people think we're trashing football. We love the game. Absolutely love it. There's just, you have to be educated and make informed decisions. Okay. And so you need to be armed with all the information before you go out there. And so people are now more than they ever have been. And that's a good thing. But I think the next big thing is the development of imaging technology to detect CTE while you're alive. Right. Currently, the technology only allows to study the brain post-mortem. People think that if they're able to develop imaging technology to discover CTE while you are still living, could be a complete game changer. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris.
No, but, you're right. You're absolutely right.
All right. Well, this person is not happy with you, too. Jay, go ahead.
Hey, guys. So I totally, Ted, I totally feel you. I understand where you're coming from, and it is a real thing, without a doubt. But we're looking at it at banning youth football. So how about all the other sports? Because if you want to look at concussion numbers, if you want to start looking now that flag football is so popular, what their numbers are, what youth hockey when they start hitting in 7th and 8th grade, what their concussion numbers are, do we want to just ban youth sports and let kids not play sports anymore, or they just get to play sports where there's no contact? I mean, where do we end it?
Sure, I'm happy to
go for that, Chris. Yeah,
go ahead.
You're equipped for this one.
And it's a fair question, and the issue is
understandable.
How we're framing it. This isn't about really concussions. This is about repetitive brain trauma. Repetitive brain trauma is the best risk factor that correlates with long-term brain degeneration, CT, Lewy body disease that can cause Parkinson's symptoms. The brain was never meant to be hit in the head hundreds of times. And those other sports, we were able to talk to their governing bodies and get rule changes. So when I grew up, I was heading balls at 5 years old. You now cannot head a ball till 11 because U.S. soccer made that rule after some public pressure and some lawsuits. USA Hockey raised the age of checking from 11 to 13, and now there's lobbying within that group to move it to 15. Removing repetitive brain trauma from youth sports is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? We just, like, what kid, you know, what's the right number of times to hit a kid in the head?
Yeah.
Right? If it's, you know, goal should be zero. And anytime you're asking a child to tackle or block somebody, they're going to get hit in the head. And so it's not really a concussion thing. It's a preventable repetitive brain trauma issue. And there's just a study that came out last month. Flag football has 1/10 the number of hits to the head than tackle football. So that's why. And football is structured differently than other sports in that there's not a governing body that sets national rules. And so
that's the big problem.
And that's partially why this bill sort of helps football move in a direction that most people believe it needs to go. The head of Pop Warner once said at a public forum, look, if I wanted to ban Pop Warner tackle football till 10, all I'm doing is creating an opportunity for our big rival like American Youth Football to swoop into town. And if there's still demand for it, pull in all the kids at 5 and they'll stay in American Youth football. And Pop Warner will go out of business in that town.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can't, like, there's a race to the bottom. The only reason we've stopped at 5 years old in terms of the first year you can play tackle in many leagues is because that's the first year that the kids can actually remember the plays in lineups.
Right.
There's no neuroscience in trying to understand why we start at 5.
And by the way, for people that are saying, you're trying to take rights away from us, in Little League Baseball, there's a bunch of rules about if you're pitching, your pitch count, If you're pitching, how can
there you go?
If
yeah.
you're pitching,
exactly.
How many innings you can catch?
Oh, I mean, that's within what the yeah. last 5 years.
I don't right? know. I don't know when yeah. they started it, but Little League just, has the. I mean, yeah. I just read an email from the Little League yesterday. Yeah.
And remember, that's based off very weak science, right? We're only counting pitches from the mound, not warm-ups, not throws in the outfield, but it works. But we live in a world right now where we have pitch counts to protect your son's elbow,
right?
And we do not count how many times they're hit in the head or set limits or even discuss it.
Right. Well, that's kind of the point I'm making, is that they want to save kids' arms. And then so my overlying point is that, yeah, they've set restrictions on baseball. So this isn't unheard of in youth sports. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
First time, long time.
Right on.
You know, I think the thing is why do we allow these people to come in and tell us what should be done? Why don't we as parents get to make that decision? Why does someone else get to come in and tell us what we do with our kids? That's my biggest thing. You know, it's the pussification of America, you know.
I'm sure you get that a lot, that people are saying it's the pussification of America. And,
yeah.
And, you know, here we would be in a much better place if kids hit each other at an earlier age. So,
one of the more Chris will put out videos of Pop Warner tackling drills, and it's hard for me to believe that there's just a ton of parents out there that are like that want to, you know, see repetitive hits to their kids, you know, at, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, and like, yeah, go get some. I mean, some of these hits and videos that you see, you're just like, the head can barely, the neck can barely support the helmet that is on the right. kid. And it's like, they get hit and it just looks like, I mean, it's a little scary. It's just, there's a point in which, like you always say, it was one of my favorite things. It's kind of like, if you think about it, like miles on an odometer, all these hits we know now add up to potentially something more damning later in life. And it's just hard for me to believe there's a parent that wouldn't be on board with preserving the kid's brain up to a certain point, to a certain age, so that they can live long, healthy, you know, good lives.
Do you think Zolak will talk to you after you've done this today?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's put a helmet on his kids since he was 2 years old.
Yeah.
All right. So, and I don't mean to speak for Chris and Ted, but there are restrictions that are put on by national youth organizations. In other sports, I mean, there are. And if you talk to coaches, first of all, you're right about football, in that there's, I don't know if there's any advantage later in the game to start playing when you're 5 years old.
And I'll be honest, Fred, Chris, John, the most people I talk to that have kids that played football from second grade on get burnt out by it. There's a burnout to,
oh, sure.
to playing their whole, like, their whole lives because of the mental and physical toll it takes on you. But by the time they get to high school, more times than not, they're like, I'm done playing. I've been playing a long time. And it's just so, you know, that's something to factor in, too, is the burnout rate that comes with that sport if you start them really, really early.
But going back to the caller, though, there's one point that I want to make. And that's, you know, when Ted and I started doing this back in 2007, when I sort of twisted your arm to go public with your story.
Yeah.
It was about giving people a choice, right?
That's
were sort of being lied to that concussions were bad and that there might be long-term effects. And it was giving people a choice. It took, you know, 10 years of sitting at Boston University every month, and now it's almost every week, there's a consensus meeting where brains that have been donated are reviewed, led by Ann McKee and Bob Stern and a bunch of great scientists there. And it took me 10 years of watching CT case after CT case come in, whether it's Aaron Hernandez or many of the, you know, names that we all know. And it took me years to get to the point where we said, I used to go train youth football coaches, but now that I've seen so much and we've learned so much, that's why I changed and said, you know what, we need to get out of this sport as fast as we can for these boys so that they can really still enjoy football and not have these terrible, you know, this disease is terrible. Like it's hard to say, you know, it's hard to tell the stories of the families of what they go through when your dad develops CT, your son develops CT, your brother, and the changes.
It's subtle
that
and it's progressive.
Anyway, so I get parents think this is we're taking away rights, and really we're trying. I'm trying to like have this conversation so we can have parents get as educated as the scientists are as quickly as possible, so they realize this is probably in the best interest of my kid.
Okay, so was it Merrill Hodge that wrote the book, pretty much dismissing all this stuff? Was he the guy that did it?
Yeah.
Okay. What is the motivation there? If you're in, what is the motivation for people who tell you not to say, you know, don't tell me what to do with my kids, but to kind of deny the science behind this? What is their motivation?
It is probably not great for me to speculate on that. But I will say one thing that I've noticed, and that is this bill also, some people interpret this bill as implying that if you put your child into the football young, that you were a bad parent, that you made a bad choice. And I want to say that that's not the goal, and that's not the case. Again, parents don't have the privilege of having this information and the science and dealing with it every day. And so if you enrolled your kid in the past, you didn't do anything wrong. You made the best choice based on the information you had. So Merrill is one person who let his son play, and his son, you know, has had some concussion issues and plays.
I feel like he's
now
kind of changed that stance a little.
Oh, his kid had concussion problems.
Yeah, if you Google it, that he had a concussion in football. He's had some things, but the point is that some people feel attacked personally, and it's hard to remove that emotional side of this. That a lot of the people that are saying this isn't real are saying it because they hope it isn't real because their kids played, rather than that they maybe, you know,
being honest with themselves.
We all come to this with our own biases, right? My bias is that I see the death and destruction every day, and I really want to avoid that for future kids. Other people say my kid seems fine and they learned something, so why are you taking this away from me?
So Ted, what is the and then we're going to have to break. But what is the when you talk to guys that you played with, or you talk to people that are in the NFL? What's kind of the consensus? Are they on board with this, or are they denying this? What are they saying?
They're all on board with it. And I think, you know, so you go, well, what you can maybe say, well, what gives you the right to, you played football, to go?
Well, I think that would give you the right.
It gives me the right. It gives me the right because I've lived through it, and I know what potentially is down the road for people. I mean, you don't know how many people come up to me and talk to me about their head injuries from something that happened at their job, something that they got in a fight, or they played high school football and they got their, you know, bell rung. Now we know that, you know, those common phrases that we used to use all the time, getting your bell rung or getting dinged, we know those are concussions, all right? Those aren't just like, you know, kind of things that you just dismiss anymore. They come up to me all the time talking about how it's maybe affected them now, okay? And it's hard to quantify. You can't get in the brain, but to a lot of people, they feel like that maybe this traumatic brain injury that they've gotten in different works, you know, of different things in work or playing football as a kid have affected them now. It's for me, it's like, you know, I have to say something. You know, I have to educate people, and I have to be – and most players I talk to, a lot of them, Fred, suffer in silence. They're embarrassed. There's a shame factor around this because they don't want to admit – that they're struggling. It's the invisible injury. You don't see it. Hey, Ted, you look fine. Chris, you look fine. What's wrong with you? Well, you know, Junior Seau, pride comes before the fall. There was something raging in Junior. His behavior was getting out of control. In private, in public, he put on a different persona. So a lot of these guys, they love it. And they don't want to be the ones to go out there and say it. A lot of guys don't want to stick their neck outs. They're worried about retribution. They're worried about future employment. They're worried about the shame that comes with it. So they keep silent. So 99% of the guys I talk to, Fred, they applaud me and they thank me for being an advocate for those guys.
Yeah, and you talk like people like Ed Reed, who's probably one of the tougher guys that played recently, and he said, "I played so my kids don't have to." All right, Chris, are you going to wear jeans, Ted? You're wearing dungarees. Is this how you're going to address the state house?
Got to wear the vest, show the guns. Too.
I got a sports coat though, Fred. I've asked Chris, so I wear a suit. And
Ted looks uncomfortable in a suit. I want him to be comfortable.
Okay. it doesn't look like he's taking it very seriously. Chris Nowinski and Ted Johnson going ahead of the state house. And listen, I'm all for what you're doing. I think that. I got no problem with it. I think that it's good work that you're doing, and I would say if I didn't, But yeah.
Fred, we appreciate the platform to educate people and talk about it. Thank you.
I wouldn't let my kid play football until high school. Yeah, so I'm even more strict than you.
There's a lot of parents that are like that, Fred. Now they
prefer he doesn't play any, or my daughter either. I don't know if my daughter's going to be interested in it, but I would prefer that they didn't at all, for not only for concussion reasons, but you get hurt there and then you can't do anything else, but mostly for concussion reasons. All right, guys, good luck today.
Thanks, Fred.
Even though Ted wore jeans, and we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.